During the onset of COVID-19, many industries had to adjust in real time, multiple times, in order to find a way through the uncertainties of the coronavirus pandemic. In our nation's capital, the American Farm Bureau Federation quickly moved to ensure continuity and effectiveness of their operations and for all of agriculture in the U.S. Pivoting and adapting provided a reliable voice for members and elected officials, and a reminder that agriculture is essential to feed America. This week, we'll visit with AFBF President Zibby Duvall about his personal COVID-19 experience, and we'll talk about work being done on farmers' behalf at the national level.
From the Ohio Farm Bureau Studio, this is our Ohio Weekly, highlighting those who grow our food, fiber, and fuel, while examining issues that are important for farmers and their neighbors throughout the Buckeye State. Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now with this week's news feed, here's our Ohio Weekly host, Ty Higgins.
USDA's Farmers to Families Food Box program started back in May to help people facing difficulties brought on by the pandemic.
We have contracted with about 200 suppliers to provide food boxes to 501c3 and governmental organizations in different styles of distribution events, but mostly truck-to-trunk style distribution events.
David Cottrell is with the Agricultural Marketing Services Commodity Procurement Program. At the distribution events he describes, boxes of food that would otherwise go to waste are instead given to people across the country who need it.
This food was probably destined to go to restaurants or maybe cruise lines or stadium events, things where they just don't have, the people aren't coming out to anymore because of the pandemic.
So he says USDA is helping to make useful connections.
These distributors that had the surplus food, they needed an outlet, and people needed food around the country. So we contracted with them to put that food in a food box and ship it to the people who really need it the most.
The food boxes contain produce, meat, or dairy products, or a combination. USDA leaders have called the program a win-win-win because it helps farmers, food suppliers, and people who need the food.
The original base period was to run from May 15th until June 30th. Around June 1st, everyone who received the contract, we told them of the government's intent to extend.
Most of the original vendors were extended into the second phase of the program, which stretches from July 1st to the end of this month. Some distributors were also added to the program.
We did do some direct contracting with contractors. I believe those were targeted at underserved areas that maybe no one in the initial proposal, we didn't find any proposals that could serve those areas.
Meanwhile, AMS staffers worked around the clock to set up the Farmers to Family Food Box program.
That takes a lot of work. That's a big task to do in just a couple weeks. But for a $3 billion procurement, to do that in a couple weeks is unheard of.
Nearly 40 million food boxes have been distributed so far. Check out ams.usda.gov, ams.usda.gov, to learn more about the program and how to get involved. Efforts to keep agriculture stable and the food supply system moving in the right direction continue through the COVID-19 pandemic. Both have so many moving parts, and the way that they have been impacted are wide-ranging. As much as we here in the Buckeye State have covered how farmers and everyone down the line in food production have been affected, those issues expand even more at the national level. Earlier this week, I visited with the American Farm Bureau President Zibby Duvall over Zoom to talk about all that AFBF has been involved in over the past few months.
President Duvall, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I'm proud to be with you today from the state of my birth. A lot of your people might not know that, but I was born in Barberton, Ohio, on a visit, family visit there. So a great place in my heart for Ohio and Ohio and agriculture. So proud to be with you today.
We have a lot to talk about, but before we do, I just want to say that I speak on behalf of myself and all of your Farm Bureau colleagues and our members that know that you've been through coronavirus episode there in your life. You're in our thoughts and prayers, and you look healthy now. How you feeling these days?
I'm doing really good, and I'm going to start out by saying thank you for all those thoughts and prayers. You know, I believe prayer is a powerful thing, and, you know, without that, I don't know that we could get through things that we're supposed to get through. So your members have been very gracious, and I thank you for those thoughts and prayers and all the cards I have received, not just during this, but while I lost my wife back earlier in the year. So, yes, I want everybody to be aware. You know, I hear a lot of my neighbors say, you know, this is a political thing. It's a political too. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing any different than the flu. And I've had the flu before, but nothing like this. And the thing that we need to be aware of is because I was working from home. Occasionally, I would go to Home Depot or Lowe's, but I wore a mask. And, of course, went to church, stayed distance, wore my mask. Done all the right things when I got out of my pickup truck and went amongst people. But we don't think about our children and when they come home and who they've been exposed to. So, actually, I got it from my oldest son. All my children came home on the 4th of July. Hadn't seen them since their mother died. And he works with a group of people. And he came in on a Friday before 4th of July on Saturday. We hugged and spent some time together Friday and Saturday. And Sunday morning, he got a call from one of his coworkers, said he was positive. Well, the very next day, my son was positive. 2 days later, I was positive. And it was just an innocent family gathering that neither one of us knew that was going to come in during that family gathering. And my son felt horrible because he had. Now, of course, he and his wife and his son had it. And then I had another grandson that had it on my daughter's family. And, you know, my son and his wife, about 4 days, grandchildren, 24 hours. But me, it took 2 weeks. My temperature spiked 3 different times. A lot of aches and pains, really bad aches and pains, headaches, and I couldn't eat. I was unable to eat for about 2 weeks and lost 20 pounds. Of course, I needed to do that, but not that way. But it was a struggle for me, and everyone was concerned about my breathing. And I really didn't think I was having a lot of breathing problems, but after I got over it and started breathing right, I realized I was having more trouble than I thought. And, you know, bless her soul, if Bonnie had been with me, she probably would have had me in the hospital. But being here by myself, I tried to stick it out. Not sure that's the right thing to do. I think you need to listen to your body and go to the hospital if you need to. So, but I'm through it. You know, the only thing I got now is trying to build my energy back. And it gets a little better every day because my appetite has come back. So, but just appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers.
To hear it. And I know that you mentioned, you know, you went out and you were careful, you did all the right things. That's how this virus works. It kind of sneaks up on you and hits you in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, we talk all the time about being safe on the farm and keeping your family safe and your workers safe and yourself safe in order to keep the food supply system moving forward. It's so important. And we're getting into a time here as we get into middle part of August and September, October, it gets busy around the farm and we need all hands on deck for harvest. It's going to start getting real busy. And we're starting to hear here in Ohio anyhow, that numbers in the rural parts of the state are starting to go up as far as COVID-19 cases. And so safety is paramount these days.
Well, the last thing on your mind is when you got a broke machine and you got to go to the dealership, you got to go to the parts store. Last thing in your mind is take a mask and wear it when you go in there. But we need to do that. I keep mine hanging on my rearview mirror and I've gotten real good at grabbing it and picking up. And right now, of course, I'm not supposed to get it back for about 3 months. I'm supposed to be immune to it, but I want to play the role everybody else is doing. And it's a small thing to wear a mask. You know, the president described this thing as the invisible enemy. And, hey, I don't know that you could express it any different way, because when my son came in on Friday and hugged me, I had no idea he was bringing something to me that was, you know, that was going to hurt me for almost 3 weeks.
Talked about the personal challenges of COVID-19. It has impacted our industry in almost every single aspect of agriculture since the middle of March. We were in D.C. On the Ohio Farm Bureau President's trip when this all started to go down and the dominoes started to fall. Schools were letting out. Businesses were closing. Agriculture, of course, felt the brunt of all of that happening at the same time. And as much as we have done here at the state level, we have worked with the American Farm Bureau Federation at the national level to make sure things get done as well. How wide-ranging were those efforts, and what all have we been able to get accomplished at the federal level through this?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it. You know, internally, organizationally, we had to figure out how we were going to handle working from home and how we will still be relevant to our states and our grassroots. Organizationally, I've met with staff and we started setting up weekly calls back to our state farm bureaus. Each department programs was on Thursday, national affairs and policy people were on Friday, every Friday at lunchtime. That's where we got feedback from our national affairs people back in our states about what issues they were seeing so that we could go try to find some solutions. Every Wednesday, I had a president's meeting, and I actually brought Washington to the presidents wherever they were staying distance at, because we had unbelievable good response from invitations of really high-level people to be able to talk to our state presidents, from Secretary Perdue to Andrew Wheeler at EPA and everybody in between. So those were good quality meetings. And then I also took feedback from them about what they were seeing in the states. Every other Monday, Dale Moore and myself met with all the administrators across the country, talking about how we can work together administratively. What are they seeing? What do they need? What can we do to help them? And Tuesday, all our communications, and I'm sure you was probably part of that, Terry Moore and all the communications people across the country. And I really have to say thank you to you and the people across the country in your positions, because we started hashtag Still Farming back when everybody was seeing some empty shelves and consumer was worried about whether or not there was enough food. And of course, there was plenty of food. It was just changing the chain to get it to them at grocery store rather than through food services. So that hashtag has touched 86 million people. Mm. 2 out of every 5 Americans have been touched by the hashtag Still Farming. We could not have done that without a great partnership with the communications people across the country and our State Farm Bureau. So thank you for that. So organizationally, we've been doing all the things that we needed to do from home. And just right off the bat with policy, the first thing that hit us was, how are we going to get our H-2A workers here? They closed the consulates down. We worked with USDA and the president on trying to fix some of the barriers. And, we had some hiccup or two, but we really did a good job of getting those things fixed, and we were able to get the workers here. Making sure that our farmers had the right equipment to protect their workers, being part of the PPP program, being able to file for that. And of course, all the work that we've done on the CARES package and the CFAP. CFAP, we played a major role in how CFAP was rolled out, what commodities, and then NOFA, when they took our comments on that, a lot of our commodities that were left out got put back in there. And now we're still looking at the Senate to come with their last package. And we're real excited about the opportunity to maybe help some contract poultry growers in this package. It's in a really good place. We think if the Senate moved forward, we think it'll hold tight, because that was one big area that people got left out of across the country. We're looking at beef and pork pricing, because we know that huge differential between box meat and what the producer was getting. Box meat went up 400%. What the producer was getting was going down 30%. Why? We're trying to figure that out. Now we're seeing something similar in dairy that deals with pooling of cheese and cheese prices. So we're looking at that. But everything across the spectrum, when we had those calls back to our state, we listed every issue that they brought up. And we got several pages on the spreadsheet of issues that we dealt with and tried to find answers for our State Farm Bureaus. And it's been a challenge. But I believe it's really brought us closer together and made us work closer together, and together we're stronger.
More with American Farm Bureau President Zibby Duvall after this on Our Ohio Weekly.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses. And in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Are you a small business owner supporting and involved with agriculture such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Then search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, fixed monthly payments, and a variety of plan designs to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
From water quality to the farm economy to overregulation, farmers are facing a lot of challenges. That's why Farm Bureau is there when you can't be. While you're doing chores in the barn, planting seeds in the tractor, or herding livestock in the pasture, your Ohio Farm Bureau is tracking important cases at the courthouse, talking with lawmakers at the State House and on Capitol Hill. Farm Bureau represents you. They are there when you can't be. Become a member or renew your membership today by contacting your county Farm Bureau or by visiting ofbf.org.
More of Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins next.
Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. This week, sharing a Zoom call I had with Zibby Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, talking about all the ways that COVID-19 has impacted agriculture and what AFBF has done inside the Beltway to help farmers all across the country.
You don't realize just how many parts of agriculture this has impacted. There are two stories to come to mind for me. There was one of a small farmer and his wife that used to go to a farmer's market, and the new rules said that one person had to handle the produce and one person had to handle the money. Well, they could only afford to take one person to the food market, to the farmer's market, and so they had to bow out of that farmer's market. The other one was a student at Ohio State that couldn't get work done at home because of broadband issues. Is there one story that maybe you've heard, obviously you've heard thousands of them, that stick out in your mind that we not may even think about being impacted by everything that was happening over the last couple of months?
I think the one story that we haven't seen, that we've seen the other side of it, that really concerns me, is all the efforts that our farmers and ranchers have went to try to protect their workers, and the media still wants to drag us through the mud on that. I mean, our farmers, of course, when it first hit, we weren't prepared for that. Nobody's prepared for a pandemic. And then when everybody trying to get masks and shields and try to figure out how they're going to distance, I mean, those are huge challenges. But our farmers responded very quickly, and we were able to get them participate in some of the equipment that come through the CARES Act. You know, so I mean, be critical. Tell us what we've done wrong in the beginning, but please recognize what we've done since we've had time to adjust. I think our farmers have done a heroic job of trying to protect our workers. And just like in my case, sometimes you just can't be protected. You do everything you're supposed to do, and it still happens. So my hats are off to that. So it's more of what we didn't hear. Everybody wanted to talk about the bad, but they didn't want to talk about what the good efforts that was going forward trying to make sure how we protect people.
I think farmers are pretty good at pivoting, aren't they? There's no such thing as a perfect year. Everything changes, and situations are constantly evolving to where you have to adjust and make sure that you're going to get done on the farm what you have to do with those new current situations. And you mentioned the food supply system issues and other things that caught us off guard that we were able to get in line. But it's going to start a conversation, President Duvall, I think, as we move forward and get through this COVID-19 pandemic about what we learned and how we might be able to change things for the good permanently. And I know that we're still in this pandemic and things are still changing, but how do you see those conversations going once we get out of this and start to look forward?
Well, unfortunately, we don't know when the end date is. You know, we may still be struggling with this a year from now. Hopefully, all of us hope we're not doing that. But I think as we get, we can't evaluate what's happened in the middle of the storm, and we're still in the middle of the storm. So we get closer to the end when we're getting back more to normal. I think we'll, as an organization and with other organizations, sit down and talk about what we need to do to be more prepared. What did we do right? What should have we have done that we didn't do? We'll be talking about some policy issues that will prevent some of these shocking things that happen, more in the way of equipping ourselves, being ready for something like this. And of course, when you go through something the second time, you're better at it. And third time, you have all the things ironed out. We hope we don't have a second and third, but I think we'll do all the right things to try to be more prepared as an organization and as an industry.
Before I let you go, a message to our members, a chance to visit with the Ohio Farm Bureau members across the state. What would you like them to know?
Yeah, just thank you so much for staying engaged. There's no time in the history of our organization or history of our industry that we need to be together now more than any other time. You know, there's so many issues out there facing agriculture, and the only way we're going to get it done is to provide that one united voice. And that's what our grassroots and our state farm bureaus and American Farm Bureau does at all different levels. I will make one plea, though. The CFAP program was a great program for our farmers, and we were right in the middle of all that, trying to help USDA get out. They've done an absolutely wonderful job to do it in such a short period of time, something that touched all of agriculture, and they did it, 4, 5, 6 weeks. That's almost unheard of. But out of the $15.4 billion that was allotted for in the CFAP program, our farmers only have sent applications for $6.8 billion of it. 44% of those dollars have been spent out. Is there not enough information out there for our farmers to know whether or not or how? Is the communication between farmers and the FSA offices not adequate to be able to make sure that they're getting their applying for it? Is it the commodities that's getting added after NOFA, after we made our comments about what commodities didn't have opportunity to be part of that? What is the problem? Because what we're seeing now is we're having reporters say, well, you only used 44% of the first stocks. Why would you need another one? Why $20 billion in the Senate? So, we need to help our farmers, our small farmers, all different demographics of our farmers, help them make sure they apply for these monies because they need them. I know they need them. And agriculture needs it. And our rural communities need that money flowing around in our economy. So I would ask our grassroots to try to be a little bit more involved in trying to help our neighbors help themselves. And hopefully we can get those numbers up because we're hoping hoping that we'll get that $20 billion in the Senate bill right now. And then we're also hoping that in the next CR that we can get the participation level for USDA and CCC raised from $30 billion to $68 billion. And that's our two big efforts out in the future of trying to do that. I just want to say I appreciate our farmers. We're here. We got their back. And if there's an issue we haven't helped our State Farm Bureau and farmers through, please let us know what that is. Our people are ready 24 hours a day to try to find solutions.
Zippy Duval is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. As always, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. Hope y'all have a great week.
More Our Ohio Weekly next. This is Our Ohio Weekly. Thanks for listening. I'm Ty Higgins. A chance encounter during a night out has morphed into a passionate dedication to setting the record straight about farming myths, and even taking on one major brand recently. It's time now for this week's segment of To the Beat of Agriculture.
My name is Michelle Miller. I'm also known as the Farm Babe on social media, where I work to bridge the gap between consumers and farmers. I'm from Northeast Iowa on a row crop and livestock farm, and I am a public speaker, social media influencer, and writer for agriculture. I kind of grew up around agriculture. I was a Wisconsin 4-H kid. My friends were all farm kids, and so I was always interested in agriculture. But I moved to Los Angeles for college. And so throughout most of my adult life, I was living in Los Angeles and Chicago, and I had fallen victim to a lot of food myths. I was this anti-GMO activist, really on this organic, non-GMO. I hated factory farming. I only shopped at Whole Foods. You know, all this kind of stuff was what I believed. And coming from the big city, I was at a bar randomly, and I met a farmer from Iowa, and we started dating long distance. I moved to Iowa for him. And, you know, here was the farmer that I was falling in love with that was growing GMOs and using hormones and antibiotics and all these things that I was so against, but I thought were so wrong. And so my passion stemmed for me changing my mind and realizing that I was really misinformed, and a lot of people are really misinformed. And so when you kind of go from feeling like you've been duped, I just wanted to get revenge on my wallet. That's really what gets me excited, is learning where your food comes from in an exciting, interesting, science-based way, where you realize, you know, I don't have to spend $6 a dozen on eggs based on an extra label. I don't have to spend this kind of money or do this extra effort for all these things, because there's just so much misinformation. And so for me, I think it's really cool to learn about where our food comes from sustainably on a global scale, and just help celebrate the voice of farmers, because I feel like there's so much misinformation that their voices are really easily drowned out. But at the end of the day, how do we feed a growing multi-billion person population and use that and be the best stewards of the planet we can be? And so I think that's really interesting when you dive into science and you see and learn about it firsthand. So if you pick up a package of chicken at the grocery store, there will be a label on it that says no added hormones or steroids. But if you read the asterisk and the fine print, it will say right on there, federal law strictly prohibits the use of hormones or steroids in poultry. So it actually does not even exist. And it hasn't existed since the 1950s. Now, on top of that, there's a very good chance that it will say no antibiotics ever. And so, again, farmers are able to do this nowadays with no antibiotics ever, thanks to the improvements in the health and welfare, biosecurity, ventilation, feed, genetics, vaccine innovation. There are so many things that have been improved in the poultry industry that should be celebrated. The fact that we can produce so much more with fewer resources, and we don't have to turn to antibiotics, and we don't have to use added growth hormones, and we don't have to do these things anymore, goes to show just how much we've improved over the last 70, 80, whatever years, even the last 20 years. But I think sometimes people hold on to myths, right? They say, well, I grew up on a farm, a chicken farm, you know, and it was so gross. And I was like, okay, what year was that? Oh, this was back in the 70s. Okay. This was back in the 90s. Okay. That's like comparing the iPhone 10 to a rotary phone. Like, technology improves every aspect of our lives, and agriculture is no exception to that.
Have you seen the Burger King ad? You have to see it to believe it and hear it.
When cows fart and burp and splatter, well, it ain't no laughing matter. They're releasing methane every time they do.
Vegan animal rights activists have perpetuated these myths that livestock are destroying the planet. And when you look at the actual U.S. EPA statistics, cattle make up about 2.5% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. So they're not destroying the planet. And if you think about the thousands or hundreds of byproducts that we get from them, it's not just meat and leather, it's textiles, it's musical instrument strings, it's cosmetics, it's pharmaceuticals. There's so many great things that we get as a byproduct from animal egg that we take for granted. And so, you know, I had this conversation with the chief marketing officer of Burger King. I had this talk with him, and now he and the creator of the ad are coming out to our farm next week. And I'm bringing the dialogue to just show them, hey, look, like, farmers care about the environment. We're not destroying the planet. We're always looking for ways to do more with less and mitigate our environmental footprint. We're always looking for ways to reduce methane. All of these things are a noble cause. It's just the way that Burger King went about it was wrong. And they talk about farts. 97% of methane from cattle comes from the other end. It was never about farts. So they got so much wrong on so many different levels. Moral of the story, I want to make agriculture tech savvy and cool and not like the old jangly guitar. I'm a fifth generation farmer, and my dad was a farmer, and my grandpa was a farmer, and all that's fine and beautiful, but it doesn't sell. And it's all that agriculture has been doing for years. And it's like, this is kind of why we need an edgy marketing image, just not the way that Burger King did it.
That's the voice of Michelle Miller here on Our Ohio Weekly, to the beat of agriculture. Michelle calls herself the Farm Babe. Be sure to learn about what she does and see her weekly columns at thefarmbabe.com. Back in just a moment here on Our Ohio Weekly.
$500 in bonus cash on eligible Ford vehicles. $750 in bonus cash on eligible Lincoln vehicles. All it takes is to be or become a member of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Bonus cash applies to purchases and leases. For all the program requirements and details, visit ofbf.org. Big bonus cash on new Fords and Lincolns exclusively for Ohio Farm Bureau members. Visit ofbf.org.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
Are you a small business owner supporting agriculture, such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, and a variety of plans designed to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
Stick around. Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues following these messages.
Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins in South Central Ohio, Jackson County, where we just met up with the winner of the 2020 Ohio Farm Bureau Ohio Ice Cream Battle. Mika Moeller is the owner of Michael's Ice Cream. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Tell us about Michael's. Obviously, you have quite a fan base. We had almost 25,000 votes on our Facebook page for the ice cream battle. Over 20% of the votes came from Michael's Ice Cream. Got a lot of people that love what you're doing around this area.
We do. We have a very loyal customer base, and I've said it before, they're the whole reason we've been around as long as we have. We've been around for 111 years now, so I'm fourth generation to run. So it is... a very pleasant surprise for us to have won.
Fourth generation of anything is very impressive. We have generations in agriculture that do go 2, 3, 4 years. It's amazing for an ice cream shop like this to have that type of history as well. Always here in Jackson?
Yes. We are not at our original location. It was just literally just down the street, around the block was our original location until we moved up here in 2001. Unfortunately, the building is being torn down. It was just old, but it was originally a stagecoach stop before the ice cream store, so it was a very, very old building.
Was it always in your plan to take over the shop?
Yeah, I am pretty much the only one left in Jackson. Everybody's kind of spread their wings and moved away. So when my dad took over the shop when I was in college, I always knew that I would eventually be the one. I was the only grandchild who ever actually worked the shop, being the only one that lived in town. So I didn't think it would be as soon. Unfortunately, my dad and stepmom passed away very close together about 5 years ago. So it was, I quit doing my nursing career and took over the shop.
That's quite a change.
It was a big change.
Has anything changed since you took it over? I know that people like tradition and they like things to keep on going for those generations. But obviously, when you come in, you want to put your mark on a couple of things. What has changed?
Well, we were very, very cautious about changing things. So very little has changed over time. So change is, you know, paint color in the restaurant. We've got patio sets outside now so people can enjoy it when the weather's nice. We've added some things from the local businesses that have opened up. We added brownies from the downtown treatery here in town around the block. We do an old Mountain Joe hot fudge sundae. It's amazing, so you'll definitely have to come in and try that one, as well as the bubble. We've added cashews. We do have fresh roasted cashews, and we also have fresh roasted peanuts. We do not roast the actual cashews ourselves. We have a company who does that for us and sends them in right after they're roasted.
You know, obviously this is a radio show, and so they're not able to see what this place looks like, but it looks like an old-fashioned ice cream parlor. Kind of walk us through from front to back what we're sitting in here.
Okay, so in the front windows, the first thing you see is our peanut roaster. It's a 1912 peanut roaster. Back then they made things to be fixed, so it is legitimately from 1912. And then you will come to an old-fashioned bar with a granite countertop. You've got the back bar with glass sundae dishes, banana split boats, saucers. We've got old vintage looking decor, pictures, things like that. We try to keep things more from the time period of when we first opened. You can't do that obviously all the time because you have to keep up with modern things, but we have the dipping cabinet. Of course, we offer about 20 flavors year round. We offer Perry's ice cream is the ice cream that we serve. Then you've got a nice large dining area for everybody to come in and sit with their families, whether it's cold outside or it's warm outside. We do have candy. We have a nice big candy rack with some older fashioned candies. Very simple, but kids seem to love it.
It's definitely worth the trip, no matter where you are in Ohio, to get down here and try what has been deemed the number one ice cream parlor in the state with the 2020 Ohio Farm Bureau Ohio Ice Cream Battle, Michael's Ice Cream here in Jackson. The one thing we haven't talked about, and the one thing that is tradition here, is the bubble. Tell me what the bubble is and how it came to be in the first place.
So that is a creation of my great-grandfather Joe. So there's a few stories on how that happened, but we're not really sure how it was, but we were told it was a Lebanese. He was full-blooded Lebanese. So it was a Lebanese dish that they served, and somehow he Americanized it. But it is a house chocolate sauce, French vanilla ice cream, marshmallow cream, and fresh roasted peanuts crushed up real fine and put on top. That is the traditional. You don't have to get it that way. Some people are hardcore. They love cherry in the bottom, strawberry. They love the Buckeye Bubble. You know, it's got hot fudge, peanut butter bonbon ice cream, the marshmallow, and the nuts. You can change it all around to whichever you're liking. Build your own.
Congratulations again. What does this contest and winning it mean to you and Michael's?
I think it's just a confirmation that our customers still enjoy coming here and that we've reached a lot farther than maybe we've even realized with our customer base, which is great. But, you know, we couldn't do it without the customers and the people who come in daily and support us like they always do.
Mika Moeller is the owner of Michael's Ice Cream in Jackson. They won the 2020 Ohio Farm Bureau Ice Cream Battle. Congratulations again, and thanks for having me, and thanks for the bubble.
Thank you.
We have a list of the 30 finalists across the state and the top 10 places to stop for ice cream online now at ofbf.org. Our Ohio Weekly continues next.
Here in Ohio, we grow possibilities. By investing in the Soybean Checkoff, farmers can concentrate on running their operations, while the Ohio Soybean Council creates new opportunities for future generations. The Soybean Checkoff works to get new soy-based products on the market, builds relationships with international buyers, and partners with researchers to increase yield and on-farm profitability. Learn more at soyohio.org/herewegrow. This message brought to you by Ohio Soybean Farmers and their checkoff.
For many, the COVID-19 crisis made it feel like the world stopped. But for Ohio Farm Bureau and our members, the work never did. As you spend early mornings in the barn and late nights in the field, Ohio Farm Bureau continues to be at the forefront, advocating and educating to help our members navigate through these challenges. Ohio's resilient agriculture community will get through this with the strength of the state's largest farm organization. Get updates and become a member at ofbf.org/stillfarming. Ohio Farm Bureau. Together with farmers.
Hi, this is John Merrihue, Director of Member Services for the Ohio Farm Bureau. Case IH is a proud supporter of the Ohio Farm Bureau. Working to build strong, prosperous agricultural communities, the Ohio Farm Bureau protects the future of your farm and your neighbor's farms all year long. And thanks to this strong partnership, Ohio Farm Bureau members receive a discount up to $500 on qualifying Case IH equipment. Choose from Case IH Farmall Series tractors, including Compact, Utility, and 100 A Series, and Maxim Series tractors as well. Plus, save on hay and forage equipment like self-propelled windrowers, mower conditioners, and large square round balers. This discount may be used with other promotions, rebates, or offers. And it's available for every qualifying Case IH tractor and piece of equipment you purchase. Join Ohio Farm Bureau today to pocket up to $500 in savings. Get your discount by visiting ofbf.org.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standard-bred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standard-bred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
Show your Ohio Farm Bureau pride with a new t-shirt, hat, or hoodie. Available now at ofbf.org/shop. The new Farm Bureau logo is now featured on a full line of clothing for men, women, kids, and babies. You can even add the Farm Bureau mark on water bottles, mugs, cell phone cases, and more. All from one spot. ofbf.org/shop. A bandana for the dog, a pillow for the couch, or an apron for the grill master. ofbf.org/shop. That's ofbf.org/shop.
Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues after this.
Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly, and thanks for listening. I'm Ty Higgins. Almost every farm has a farm dog. My first one was a Dalmatian named Sparky, and from the day I got him on my fifth birthday, everywhere I was on that farm, Sparky was right there with me. When he wasn't with me, he was more than likely getting into trouble by sneaking into the neighbor's chicken coop and would hightail it back home when the farmer up the road caught him. As much as I love that dog, I'm pretty sure he would never be in the running for Farm Dog of the Year, a contest from American Farm Bureau and Purina. Terry Moore is Vice President of Communications for American Farm Bureau. Hi, Terry.
Well, good morning, Ty.
Do you have a story about your first dog?
Oh, my goodness. I've had dogs all my life. My very first one was a Labrador, and his name was Pal. And I, if you'd have left it to me, I'd have curled up and slept with them every night.
For the third year in a row, we're celebrating one of the unsung heroes of American agriculture. Tell us, Terry, if you would, about Farm Bureau's Farm Dog of the Year contest.
You bet. So we're in our third year of Farm Dog of the Year, and it's really been such a wonderful way, not only to honor an important player on the farm, our farm dogs, but really to reach out to the public and find a connection point with folks who maybe know nothing about agriculture but love dogs. You know, we started for the first time last year the People's Choice Pup, which is we took the top 10 winners from the Farm Dog of the Year and put them on social media, their profiles, and asked people to vote. And lo and behold, 100,000 people voted. So we know we reached beyond the fence posts, if you will, and drew in some folks who had never interacted with us. And what a wonderful way to do that. Take Flint from last year, our 2020 winner, or this year, I should say, but announced at convention in January, Beth Crandall and her husband, Rhett. Flint was actually Beth's pet before they moved on the farm. So he was 7 years old when he learned how to guide the cattle. And it's such a beautiful story. They talk about how he just developed those skills and now could outdo any farm dog you could find, and intuitively knows how to keep those cattle together. It's really a fun story.
You mentioned reaching beyond the fence post. I like that because that's something that Farm Bureau takes very seriously in engaging with consumers and telling them exactly what goes into putting that food on the kitchen table. And a lot of people not involved in our industry may not realize how much a part of the everyday farm operations a dog can be. They are a member of the team.
They very much are. And the great thing about that is for the last 2 years, our profiles, our farm dogs of the year have really, you've really seen a personal relationship between their owners and the dog. So it's both a work dog and a companion. And that really helps people relate and trust farmers, build that trust. You know, clearly these farmers share my values when it comes to my pet. So I'll bet they're taking good care of their farm animals too. That's sort of a translation. We also know in the midst of COVID, you know, when people saw those empty grocery shelves, it scared the heck out of them. Many Americans had never, ever, ever thought about the possibility of a food shortage because we have such an abundance. So the interest in the food supply and how food is produced has never been higher. And we absolutely want to take advantage of that.
That stress for the consumer certainly carried over to the farm as well. We have had some stressful times through this pandemic in rural America. And you know, more than just being a part of the crew, dogs can also better their humans' well-being. And that's needed more probably than ever these days.
Absolutely. And that's why we say that our Farm Dog of the Year is intended to celebrate farm dogs that work alongside their farmers and ranchers, that are helpful, playful, obedient, but also great companions. That's really important. You know, farming can be a lonely job too. Lots of time out there in the fields alone, et cetera. And just having that dog alongside you can be a great pick-me-up.
How does one go about entering their farm dog into this contest, and what are the parameters?
So any Farm Bureau member can enter their dog, and it's pretty easy. We ask you to answer a couple of questions and provide some photos or a video. We love the videos. And you can do that right on our website at fb.org.
Terry Moore, VP of Communications for American Farm Bureau, our guest this week on Our Ohio Weekly. Again, the website, fb.org. And to be more specific, you can use the /2021 Farm Dog to find the contest rules and to enter your dog into this year's contest. Terry, thanks so much.
Great to talk to you, Ty.
If you want to get involved, you got to do it quick. Application deadline is coming up on Thursday.
Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. And produced by Ohio Farm Bureau. Working together for Ohio farmers to advance agriculture and strengthen our communities. Be sure to visit Our Ohio Weekly's podcast page to listen to previous episodes at ofbf.org/Our Ohio Weekly.
Thanks again to American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall, the Farm Babe Michelle Miller, and Michael's Ice Cream for being on the show this week. I'm Ty Higgins. We'll see you down the road.